Hey everyone, this is Brian from Many Sided Media. Recently, ICE has once again murdered an American citizen in Minnesota, but the citizens of Minneapolis are showing up for their community to resist this violence. We make shows about games and imagination and all the silliest things in life, but we also want to support the people of Minnesota. So here is how we are going to start. This month, we are going to be matching donations to the Women's Foundation of Minnesota and their Immigrant Rapid Response Fund. These donations will help organizations that support and protect immigrants by providing human services and legal services to immigrant communities under attack. We are matching all donations up to $500, so if you send us a receipt or proof of donation on social media or by email to manysidedmedia@gmail.com, we will match your donation in kind. Not only that, if you donate any amount over $20 anytime this month and let us know about it, we will also send you a code for a free month to our Patreon. This month, we're going to be putting out talkbacks for Perils and Princesses, some original music from that season, plus a special two-part Die series with guest GM Kieran Gillen and guest player Nathan Yaffe. So not only will you be donating to a great cause, not only will your generosity be doubled by the folks here at Many Sided Media, but you will also get a bunch of great TTRPG content as well. So once again, go to WFMN.org and donate to the Immigrant Rapid Response Fund. Let us know that you did, and we will match your donation and send you a free month of our Patreon. While times right now may feel dark, remember that individually, things may seem hopeless, but united as a community, we can make great change. So just do one thing every day. That's really all I'm trying to do. Just one thing. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's volunteering in your community, meeting your neighbors, going to a protest, signing a petition, or finding some other way to get involved in your community. Every step that we make towards a better tomorrow is frustratingly imperceptible. But if we just keep making them, then one day we may actually find ourselves in that better future that we all hoped for. And with that, enjoy the show. Hey, Elliot.
Hey, Brian.
What's the talk of the table?
This week, we're sitting down with Sam Carr, the creator, artist, and world builder of The Eternal Ruins. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Good to have you.
We're excited to talk about this game and about like kind of world building in general, something we haven't really covered on the show that much.
No, yeah, I've been looking forward to talking more about it.
I think it's going to be great. We want to kick this off to talk about like world building in general, and specifically your project, The Eternal Ruins. It's about to be published as a role-playing game by MythWorks. But before we get into any of that, can you give us a primer? What is The Eternal Ruins and how did it start?
The Eternal Ruins is an endless stone structure that spreads in all directions, vertically and horizontally. Old halls covered in moss, rows of crumbling pillars. It's quiet and it's vast and its origins are unknown. And wanderers, the children, awaken from inside these sleeping statues, which have stood for time untold. They explore the ruins and they learn about it. There are ancient spirits for them to bargain with. There are servitors that are ancient constructs that repeat their commands endlessly until they basically crumble. And there are demons that are beings of emptiness that hunt and cause despair in wanderers. It's very inspired by Fumito Ueda, if I'm saying that right at all. Games like Eco and The Last Guardian, also Zelda and Hollow Knight. And it mainly started from, I don't know, I played Eco like a really long time ago, like maybe 10 years ago. And it was one of those things where I just thought about it a lot afterwards. It's a PlayStation 1 game,
yeah,
where you play a boy in a large castle. I think all of the spoken parts are in like a made up language that isn't translated. So it's very, I don't know what the word then would be, but like you infer all of what's going on with his relationship with this other character just from their movements and basic sounds. And something about the atmosphere of that really stuck with me, of you're exploring this really huge place. And at times it can be quite scary, but it's also quite peaceful. When you save in that game, you just sit on a bench together and have a nap essentially. And I always liked that idea of, like, you never leave the dungeon, almost. Like, it's a place where that can actually be very beautiful as well. I'm an illustrator for video games and board games, things like that. And I've been working on a lot of different stuff for a long time. And I basically had this idea of, what if all of my art from now on is in the same world? Like, it's part of the same thing. And if it's just all of the things that I like to draw and has a lot of potential for possibilities, the fact that it's, this is like an endless place, I can always keep adding stuff. Yeah, it kind of spawned from that.
I imagine the idea of sitting in a world for a very long time as an artist is, like, both exciting and maybe even a little bit, like, daunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a constriction, but also it's freeing. It's like, hey, let's stay in this world forever. Let's see how far we can go. When you started thinking of this as a world to be built, did you have any specific core pillars of what this world is and what this world isn't that helped, like, guide what you were making as you continued building out this expansive world of the Eternal Ruins?
Definitely. And I think I have a sketchbook that a lot of the development of it happened in, and it's kind of funny looking back, seeing these, like, brainstorms of, like, before it was even really a full idea, I guess, of just trying to figure out what I wanted to capture. I think, yeah, a big part was this sort of peaceful energy, like the world's a chaotic place, and I like things a lot that bring this relaxation. So in a way, I think it was kind of like a bit of a mental haven to be able to go there. I wanted it to be a world that can continually be expanded. The fact that this is a ruins without limit means that if I'm, like, in 10 years time, like, you know what, I really want to do this other thing, or I'm really interested in this other kind of place or whatever right now, that it's, like, feasible for it to be added in, so that I won't get trapped and then be like, oh, I give up, I want to do something else. I think that's really nice. And yeah, I think a lot of it was about, like, vibes and tone for me, of, like, for example, some earlier sketches had a bit more, like, gore or blood on, like a fight or something. And I was like, I don't know if that felt right. A lot of it was through trial and error like that, but then it was kind of like landing on, like, there won't be, like, a gore or depictions or anything like that, but, you know, like, a blood trickle down the mouth is fine. There's a lot of, like, fine tuning of, like, what is and isn't Eternal Ruins.
Mm-hmm.
Just through making it, I guess, rather than sitting down in the beginning and setting rules for myself.
What are the biggest things that maybe have surprised you about the world as you've continued to grow it? Like, you said you found that, like, violence wasn't in it, but was there anything where, like, in the process of making, you were just like, oh my god, this is a core thing that I did not know would be a core thing of this when I started?
Yeah, definitely the sprites, which are these sort of small blue droplet, like, spiritual toddlers, I guess. And they were something that just kind of emerged on the side as I was doodling. I didn't even really think that much about having something like that in the setting. I just sometimes draw a lot without really thinking about what I'm drawing. And I was like, these kind of, like, small characters keep popping up. And I think at the beginning they were made of, like, stone or something. And they just kind of, like, naturally refined themselves the more I sketched them, and I didn't really expect them to pop up. They're surprisingly fun to draw in a world that is, I don't know, it's got some dark or existential elements to it, I guess, but the sprites are very simple in that they just live to have fun and be joyous and make games of things. So I think drawing them, I don't know, it, like, is fun for me in a way that I didn't expect at all. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then in this process, as you were building this world and kind of, like, making this YouTube channel of, like, expanding on what the Eternal Ruins is, when in that process did you realize that this is also a tabletop role-playing game?
Well, interesting. I might have had it in my head maybe from the beginning, because yeah. I've been a big fan of tabletop role-playing games, like, all of my 20s, I guess. Like, I played my first game, like, 10 years ago, which was a Pathfinder campaign, and then I got hooked, like so many of us do. But a lot of my consumption of the hobby has mostly been either running games or even just buying and reading them, because I found some settings basically just, it's just a game, but it's a whole setting and you can just sit and read the book as a way to consume that media almost.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that kind of thing has always been in my mind. And I think the experience of building worlds for tabletop role-playing games was very, like, essentially trained me to do this of like, what is really needed to build something that people can relate to without having to make everything. So yeah, I guess it was probably in the back of my mind from the start of like, this would be so cool if it was a tabletop role-playing game. And now
we've all been
it's happening.
There.
It's very weird.
We've all been there.
And where did that sort of process begin? Now you've partnered with MythWorks. How did it sort of, I don't know, leave the garage of YouTube and become a tabletop role-playing game?
I'd actually been working on the project for 2 years before I made the YouTube video. And
oh, wow.
I thought like, oh, I'll just upload a couple of videos and maybe it'll grow over time. Like I was trying to put stuff out on a lot of different platforms to see, like it had seen some viral posts on like Twitter back when it was Twitter, things like that. So I kind of knew there was something there. But yeah, so I made a YouTube video and I think there was some window open in the algorithm because it just went crazy. It got like 300,000 views or something. And sort of overnight, I had a fan base, which is very confusing and amazing at the same time. And with that came a lot of people reaching out, wanting to do something together. And yeah, there was a whole new job of trying to filter those out. Like what is a real offer and what's a fake offer and what's a good offer and what's a bad offer. There was a lot of people who are like, I play games and I could make a 5e world book, which is
sure.
Like, okay, that's an option. But since I had this experience of being into weirder tabletop role-playing games, I knew I didn't want to do that. So yeah, I think Ray reached out initially about making, Ray, the head of MythWorks, reached out about making solo game. Yeah, and I was interested, but I was more interested in making a game people can play with their friends. And yeah, it was talking to Felix mostly. I think he'd seen the YouTube video I'd made and he was very interested in collaborating with someone. And I could tell that he really cared about the world, but also understood it. It wasn't just someone trying to get in on something or ride some kind of wave. Like he seemed genuinely excited to create stuff in the world. So yeah, after a few calls, I felt like, yeah, okay, this is a good idea. And also, because there was a discussion at one point of like, will I write the book and make the game mechanics and do the art? And I'm very glad we did not go down that road, not only because of just time management, but also I've just been constantly blown away by the level of the writing and also the game mechanics. It would have been terrible if I'd done it. So I'm very happy that I got people who know what they're doing.
I mean, we're big fans of Ray at MythWorks and Felix and the Wild Sea and everything they do. It's just like really elevated stuff that always, A, is just like a great game, but also just like looks really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally understand how you saw Ray's proposal and was like, yep, that's the one.
Kind of circling back to our first question where we asked you what the Eternal Ruins is sort of as a world, as a project. What is Eternal Ruins as a TTRPG? How would you define that if you would define it differently?
Yeah, I would say it's very much an exploration game. One of the biggest mechanics and biggest portions of the book is the journeying. We really wanted it to be so that you don't like have a map that you explore, like a set place. It's like this, when wanderers explore the Eternal Ruins, they don't really know where they're going. They're wandering. So they discover stuff as they go. And it's sort of, yeah, it would be futile to try and really like map your way through it because it's so big. It's more like you get stuff generated for you. So most of the book is, these features, which are like locations, and details, which is sort of an adjective for them. And they can just be combined in a lot of different ways to create these unique locations. So like route bound is a detail, and then tower is a feature. And those, you can end up with a tower that's covered in routes. But yeah, then it could also be like a root bound bridge that's being held up by roots, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I would say very exploration focused, and also a theme that was in the world building from the start was this link between like hope and despair.
Mm.
These wanderers are like hunted by these demons that roam the eternal ruins, that cause despair in wanderers and sort of feed off of that. So there's like this psychological, slightly philosophical element to it, I guess. And the wanderers aren't really, it's not like a survival theme or game. It's more like you need to eat. Yes, because you need it to survive, but that's not really the focus. It's more like you need to eat like a really heartwarming meal to restore your hope so that you don't fall into this despair of wandering this like endless place. That's something that ended up becoming like an actual mechanic. There's like a despair and hope track, and you need to manage that throughout the game, which I really like.
I really love that this is a game about exploration, which can be a tough thing just because it's like a little bit, it's not as bog standard as like, this is a game focused on combat. It's just like a slightly different thing. But the element of the player characters, the wanderers, being themselves, not like not having a backstory, like coming into the world and themselves having to explore and discover who they are, what this place is. It's such a great boon to the players in this world where they want to explore. Not only are you making a world that's interesting to explore, but also you're making them make characters that themselves want to explore. No one is making a character that is going to have like this baggage behind them that's going to hold them back from what the game is trying to do. I think that's just like a really smart element to help the players get over that leap of most people are focused on like combat-centric games. This not having as much of that now, are they're pulled into a great space of trying to explore.
I really like how Felix adapted the Wild Words engine for that, because obviously in the Wild Sea, there's like a really huge amount of character options in the beginning because mm-hmm. you're from a world filled with culture and many places. Whereas I really wanted the Wanderers to be like, they start fairly simple, but it's from exploring this place that they really become more unique, I guess. So it's like a group who's just started. It's like they maybe don't have that many experiences of their own between them. But so that when you can look back after you played a long time, be like, okay, wow, my character has come like a really long way. But yeah, I like that they emerge into essentially, yeah, the dungeon. And it's like, yeah, now you just explore. That is the game. There is no town to go to. I think that was a really big thing for me that a lot of people, that's like the biggest criticism I get of the whole world, is that there isn't any societies, which I completely understand. But looking at a lot of the inspirations for the project, it really is just about exploring this ancient place. And I think being able to just go back to town takes away that magic for me.
You mentioned the Wanderers a few times, and for folks who don't know, maybe listening, all of the characters in this game are children, yeah?
Exactly, yeah.
So could you tell us a little bit more about like the characters that people embody in this game, and like what kinds of characters are we embodying as we play?
So the two main defining characteristics that you'll choose from in the game mechanics is your origin and your path. So all Wanderers emerge from these sleeping statues, which are these strange statues that are just all over these ruins. And every now and then, seemingly at random, one of them will, their bowl that they're holding will light up and the stone will crack and fall apart. And one of these children will fall out. And usually, they're like bald, naked to start, and they are kind of out of it. And they have to find their way in this world. And so one of the biggest distinguishing traits would be where that happens. That's the origin. So in the playtest that we have out right now, we have the Bank Broken, who awakened next to water, the Bridge Broken, who awoke on a bridge and has the immediate choice of which way to go. We have the Mass Broken, which is awakening among just many, many statues, just rows. And they find this sense of comfort in knowing that there's so many other wanderers out there, even if they haven't emerged yet, and the root broken who awaken in these overgrown sections of the ruins.
Mm.
The idea is that this is where these wanderers will spend their first time wandering, that they will, it's like a very formative time for them. A lot of the things that they initially pick up will be from around this area. A lot of skills that they develop will be trying to navigate these places. And for the full version of the game, we even explore some other ideas that aren't just like where you awoke, but also how, for example, the curse broken, which will be that a demon sort of immediately set upon you as soon as you broke free from your statue, and that either is something that you absolutely hated, or you were like, maybe demons aren't that bad. And then the paths are more like how these wanderers choose to live. In the playtest, we have the pioneer, who's sort of like a leader, explorer, likes helping others. The rascal, who lives for mischief and having fun. Let's see, the scrounger is someone who likes to hoard things, which we realized a lot of fans of the Eternal Ruins like to do.
Yeah, I get that one.
Yeah, a lot of trinket collectors. And the chronicler, who collects knowledge from this place and is really trying to uncover mysteries, combine with the origins to make unique combinations of wanderers. And like I said, there'll be a lot more in the full version of the game too.
As this game transitioned from a just world-building project into a TTRPG, were there things that you discovered in that process that helped you expand on the world? Like the process of having to make this a playable game for other people rather than just a world that you get to ever expand on, that you're the sole author of. Did that creation of shared authorship reveal to you anything new about this world?
I think one of the big things was that there were many undefined or unfinished areas of the world that was perfectly fine when it was just me working on it. I think curses was one of those. It's like, yeah, I've mentioned curses a bunch of times. I sort of have a vague idea of what they are.
But we'll get there eventually a little bit, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, there's no rush, it's just me. But then when we were working on the game, it's like, so what are curses? Because we think we want to have a game mechanics for them. And I was like, oh yeah, I really need to like not only write it down, but like actually define exactly what it is. Because I think sometimes it's like a few different ideas sort of hovering around together where it's like, could be any of them at a given time. And I don't need to decide just yet. So yeah, I think having to define unfinished areas was a big thing. I think also my experience of actually playing it, which was incredible and also very strange.
I was going to say, that's got to be a weird kind of like headspace to be in, of finding a thing that was yours and now is everybody's and stuff.
It was sort of amazing, though. So cool to be like, okay, I'm now in the world. I think I had such a zoomed out approach on the whole setting that being able to experience sessions of like, I'm actually a character in this place experiencing it gave me a lot more appreciation of what do wanderers do on a smaller scale in a scene, and how do they interact with these surroundings. And I think that's been really surprising. Like a session we played, there's like a crafting mechanic, and these players wanted to craft a gift for this spirit whose shrine they were staying at. For no reason, they didn't want anything from them. And I just found that like, I never thought of that. Like, not even just like mechanically, but I just never thought a wanderer would do that. But now that I have that idea, that makes complete sense. So it's really fun seeing how people take the idea and turn it into something new.
I imagine having people playing in the world is just such a help as a world builder and a game designer, because it puts you in those positions of, I never thought of that. And now, like, I can't put it off because we're playing and people want an answer. I have to come up with an answer right now in a way that is,
yeah.
It's like, you know, when is it due? When is it done? When it's due? And it's like, well, the deadline is in 2 seconds, my guy.
But I think as like a tip for anyone world building, I think having to put your ideas out there is one of the best ways to get it done, because when I was mostly defining stuff through YouTube videos, these were things that I've been thinking about for years and being very like wishy-washy on, but then being having to write a video that people were going to see. Yeah, I don't know, helped a lot with like, okay, you actually have to figure this out now. People will remember what you chose, so you better be happy with it. I think that was a really good way to just lock things in, because I think otherwise I probably would have just spent forever in this kind of quantum state of like, any of these ideas are the idea, rather than deciding on stuff.
The Eternal Ruins is a new TTRPG based on the fantasy world building of artist Sam Carr. The Eternal Ruins are a vast and endless collection of corridors, chasms, towers, and gardens. In the Eternal Ruins, you will play as newly awakened wanderers, stone statues hatched to life as children, seeking solace and hope in the bright places of the ruins, safe from the despair that the darker, more hostile corners might hold. Inspired by games like Eco, Hollow Knight, and Zelda Breath of the Wild, the Eternal Ruins explores themes of spirits and demons, hope and despair, exploration and identity. Based off the award-winning Wild Words engine by Felix Isaacs that is used to power one of our favorite games, The Wild Sea. Explore the Eternal Ruins on YouTube and back the game on Kickstarter starting January 27th.
Hey campers, have you heard of Season 5 of 5 GMs in a Trenchcoat from Inside the Tent? You haven't? Well, let us tell you about it.
A nice, green, natural regional park. This is Hidden Falls Regional Park. For our purposes in our world, it's a bit larger than it actually is. It is the summer of 1983, and it is all of your first time getting to stay at Hidden Falls.
We promise it's going to be a great time. It's going to be a story of three childhood friends going across the Americas in 1987 using Kids on Bikes 2nd edition. So grab a blanket, make some coffee. The first three episodes are available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now that the world is kind of being put to print in this game format, is it done? Where does the world go from here?
Oh, I've it sounds very corny, but I feel like I'm just sort of starting, because I felt like I've made, for example, I had made YouTube videos of like the things I thought were just the essential pillars, the different things that could be experienced or interact within this setting. And then now making the game, I feel like we've fleshed those out more instead of just having a single video about spirits that people can draw from. It's like there are now actual spirits with artwork and whole descriptions and mechanics that they can play with. And now I sort of feel like, okay, now the base understanding of what this setting is in place. Now I can like really start to flesh it out. My plan essentially is just to keep working on this because I really like it. So I think unless something drastic happens, my goal is just to keep going of, if it's not another thing related to the role-playing game, then perhaps a comic. A lot of people would love to see a video game, which I would really like to, but I also know the horrors of trying to make a game.
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. I think tabletop role-playing game felt like the sanest starting option, especially since there was a lot of existing artwork already, which takes off quite a big load. But yeah, I like the idea of just adding to this thing and watching it continue to evolve as time goes on.
When you were starting, it's clear that like you come from the world of like illustration and coming from a visual perspective, but then you started doing these YouTube videos where you're having to, you know, write narration, and now you've been working on this game. Now, at this point, when you're making for the Eternal Ruins, do you still approach it visual first, or has this, like, other mode of, like, thinking about writing first come in from this other kind of work?
Yeah, definitely. I've had to develop a lot of skills that I wouldn't have if I just continued to be like, I'm just a guy who draws pictures, and instead be like, I am the creator of this thing. I would say that I've had to, yeah, get a lot better at thinking about narrative, and that there has also become like a need now for artwork of, I've written about this thing a bunch of times, but I've never drawn it. So I guess it's kind of gone the other way around. But I do find that it always seems to work best to go back to just a sketchbook with a pen and doodle. I think the sort of first conception of the whole thing is just a page in my sketchbook from a bunch of years ago. That's just that, just wanderers doing things in the ruins, like tracing engravings from a wall or poking a statue, things like that. I think I get my best ideas for world building just from moments like that, of like, what would be cool to see, or what do I imagine happens, and then kind of figuring out what that all means from there. So yeah, I try and do that as much as I can, rather than feeling like I'm filling in the gaps of the world building, if that makes sense.
100%.
Talk about kind of world building in general, because I know it's a thing that a lot of game masters enjoy and want to spend time in. You, having been someone who's like done this now professionally, you know, having gone from like this YouTube video to now this tabletop role-playing game and this expansive project, do you have any other pieces of advice for people who want to make their world feel more lived in, feel more expansive as they're going about building a world?
So I definitely fall on the side of softer world building. And from what I've seen that be defined as, it's like hard world building is like, you need to know absolutely every tiny thing about how this world works. It's like a piece of clockwork almost. Everything affects everything else. It's very complicated systems. I'm much more on the other end, I guess, of vibes. I don't like that word that much, but I would say more feelings, tone. And I would say you don't need to know everything. I get like a lot of questions about this world, and some of them I don't really understand why it's a question. For example, like, what happens to wanderers when they die? And I just end up feeling like, we don't even know that about our own world. Like, would it make you happier to know an answer to that question? So I think there's definitely some people who want to understand everything about this thing so that they can enjoy it. And then there's other people who like not knowing. And I think I'm more on the side of people who like not knowing. But I think mystery is important as well. I don't think you should define absolutely every aspect. And if you do, maybe you don't need to share that as well. And I think that helps me with creating it, because I felt like I just started with these points in this big void, and then started connecting those. And I didn't feel this pressure of needing to answer all these really small questions while I was still trying to figure out what I even wanted the whole thing to be. And for those points, I recommend really starting with things that you really like, even if they're just from something you really like. And it will just become more unique as you get more specific about what those things are and how they connect to other things. And I think it's fine if the thing you end up making is similar to the things you like. I think there's a need to be unique, especially from the beginning, that can kill a lot of projects.
Yeah.
But really, all media is connected. Like, I made this because I spent 10 years being like, why is there nothing really else like Eco, like, or Last Guardian? Like, why isn't there a comic like that, or a TV show? I would spend like evenings like Googling, like, there must be more media like this. And then I think I ended up feeling sort of fed up of like, I guess I'm going to have to make it. And I think that's great, though. That's how people discover things. So it's like, if your work is similar to stuff, then people will connect to it. I remember earlier on as an artist, I really didn't like when I would get comments that would be like, oh, this reminds me of blah, blah, blah. Because I would be like, no, it's not like that. It's my own unique artwork that's different from everything else.
I'm special.
Exactly.
I'm unique and totally individual.
That was me. And then I sort of realized now, like, that's people saying they like it. That they connect with this because they're fans of those things, and it's part of that tapestry. So I think that's actually a really powerful tool if you can get over that feeling of not being special anymore, which is hard, I think, but helpful.
Describing it as part of a tapestry is something I really like. Like, it is another thread that is like slowly expanding this idea. Like, it is adjacent to and it's building on, rather than just a carbon copy of. I do really like the idea of, especially in a game so about exploration, that the world isn't, the world's edges are a bit hazy, so that you want to go closer to the edges and be like, ooh, like squint and, you know, what is through that fog, rather than having this very hard edge defined thing that is less exciting to explore, because it's kind of like seeing the monster in a horror movie. The second you see the monster, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But before you see the monster, your brain builds it up into something that it could never possibly be. I like having those foggy edges of things. Makes you want to lean in and learn a little bit more.
I would say that was like an unintended effect from the sort of method of world building of, I want this to be fun by not knowing everything as well. And I didn't really expect that other people would experience that as well. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a fun thing where Felix, who you work with on this, talks about like how the Wild Sea at its face is a really specific world, like really specific flavor and stuff, but every game and table is their own version of the Wild Sea, and it's tweaked and it's different, and they make different choices and they have alternate presentations for things and stuff. And I'm curious, like, in playtesting, and then now when this goes into the wide world, like, how do you feel about the fact that there's going to be, you know, hundreds and thousands of different kind of versions of the Eternal Ruins now, rather than just this one?
I think it's amazing, especially since the setting is this endless space where wanderers who maybe will never even meet each other are exploring the same giant structure will sort of be made real in a way from separate tables around the world actually doing that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's really fun. I think when we were playtesting, it's kind of like when I'm in a game, there's sort of this like, wait, is this canon? Is this like allowed or not? And I'm really more on the end of like, yeah, no, this is a game. This is fun. We're not adding to any canon here. Like we're sitting and enjoying this thing. So yeah, I would say I really like when people do their own thing. I never really understand, like, on our Discord when people are like, can I do this in my fan fiction? And my answer is just like, yeah, why not? Like, I'm not gonna no one's gonna stop you. It's just for fun. Like, do it. If it's like, if you really feel inspired by this thing, but there's something you don't like about it, then change it and enjoy it.
I think that's truly that phrase, if you don't like something, change it. That's how every good piece of art gets made. It's like, there's something out there that I really like, but I want to fix one thing about it. All right, I'll make my own thing. And then by iterating, it becomes new.
Yeah. And I don't know, even like Felix, it's like one thing he's really wanted since he started working on it is like, I wish wanderers could have beards. And I'm like, well, they are children. And he's like, won't stop trying to find a way to make it happen. Whether it's like, my character is wearing like a large fake beard made from like grass, or like, I have like two facial hairs growing out of my face. So,
it's so
I really
specific.
Love, I know, but I really love his way of, trying to push the boundaries that exist, and it's made for really interesting stuff as well, like all across the game. So yeah, I really like that stuff. I'm not very precious at all about canon and things like that.
Yeah, that's so funny. That is such a, I can hear Felix being like, yeah, but could we put a beard on him? It's really good.
That'll be the expansion book.
Exactly. Beards expansion. I think the other thing was like extra arms. He was just like, players love having an extra arm. And I was like, I don't really understand. just like looked into it, I think he's right. It's like, so yeah, you can have like, like an extra servitor arm, like a robotic arm. And then there's like a relic that's sort of like an arm as well. Yeah, things like that where it's like questions I never would have thought of and maybe probably wouldn't have made myself, but I'm like, I'm really glad this exists now.
Hell yeah.
That's so rad.
So Sam, this book, this world, it's coming out, it's being made real by MythWorks. When can people support the project and like what can they get and like how can they hold the Eternal Ruins physically in their hand made manifest?
So the Kickstarter launches on January 27th, but you can already follow the campaign so you'll be notified when it launches. We also currently have the playtest PDF, which is on the MythWorks site, that is all of the core rules, a bunch of spirits and demons. Did I say it was 190 pages?
No.
It's 190
Hell of a
page
quick
PDF.
Start.
No, it's actually huge, which I think I've been trying to get people to realize that, like, no, you can play this game now, like for quite a long time, probably.
You can print it out and kill someone.
Exactly. And yeah, we're going to be doing a digital release as well as physical. There'll be a bunch of like postcards, stickers, GM screen, a whole bunch of extras, deluxe version of the book. And an art book as well, which will be separate sketches and development of the project. Since I would say an interesting thing about making this has been sort of the art forward approach to making a game. We're trying to lean into that.
How many assets did you have ready for the MythWorks team when they like were like, okay, we're going to lay out this quick start and then lay out the book?
I don't actually know a number because I'm not that organized, but it was like 3 years worth of work. So it was like most of the playtest artwork was done already, essentially. And it's mostly, I don't know the term for it, but like artwork that appears on the page, more like a drawing of a small thing.
Like the spot
rather
art.
Rather than like these spot big art. Illustrations. Spot art, yeah. So a lot more of that to do for things specifically tied to the game rather than, yeah, like developing the whole thing, obviously, or like illustrations. So yeah, I think that was very fun for Felix and Rob to do layout with of like, oh, this is just ready to go, essentially.
Doing an art book with a release of a tabletop role-playing game, especially one that is so tied to the art, is I'm actually kind of amazed I haven't seen that before. I can't think of a time that's mm-hmm. happened. And yeah. Like, I think like I would love a Wildsea art book. I think that's really cool. I think more people should be doing that.
One of the interesting things with this is that many of my fans aren't people who play role-playing games. Mm-hmm. A lot of the last months have been trying to explain to people who like what I do that you can play this and it's not a video game. You roll some dice with your friends and you can imagine that you're in the Eternal Ruins. I think there's a lot of people who are interested in the art or just lore. So I think I'm really trying to make it so this has something for everyone. And then, you know, also maybe try and trick them into becoming gamers like us as well.
We got to trick every single person we can.
Hey,
got to trick them into having fun.
So, Sam, our final question, which we ask everyone who comes on Talk of the Table, is what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking you for a recommendation for our audience. This can be anything and everything under the sun, games related, not games related. It can be to take a deep breath or go for a walk. Sam Carr, what would you like to bring to the table today?
Mouse Guard. It is a comic series about small mice, but it's a bit similar to Eternal Ruins in that it looks cute, but it reads like Game of Thrones or something. I think there's two comics. There is a role-playing game as well, actually, and they almost made a movie too. That is kind of like a project that has paved some kind of way of an artist making their own thing and it getting much bigger. So yeah, I would really check it out. It's awesome.
Well, thank you so much, Sam, for coming to the table. Do you want to let people know one more time where they can find you online, where they can find the Eternal Ruins, and when they can back the Eternal Ruins on Kickstarter?
Eternal Ruins on YouTube and Instagram. We have links to a Discord from there where we have a very active community of people who love to talk about it and help new people get into it. The Kickstarter will be launching on January 27th. You can already follow it, and you can already get the playtest from the MythWorks website.
Hell yes. And if you want more gaming content from us here at Talk of the Table, you can check out the many-sided newsletter for bi-weekly articles and news from us, and also become a member of the many-sided Discord. We can talk about this episode and every other episode of Talk of the Table. We also have the many-sided media Patreon, where you can get access to bonus roundtables, bonus actual plays, and a whole bunch of stuff that supports what we do here at Talk of the Table. As always, rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.